Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and this is our World Peace Diet Circle for May 16th, 2019. And it's delightful to us to be with you. Madeline's right here, too. And we're both excited about the opportunity to share a little bit about the power and the liberation and the healing of awakening to the consequences of animal agriculture and the many benefits of our capacity to question the official narratives in our society and connect with our innate kindness and compassion and respect for other living beings and move toward a plant-based or vegan way of living. So that's what it's all about here for the next hour and a half. This is a call that's open to people who are members of the World Peace Diet Circle, going through the World Peace Diet Facilitator training programs or who have gone through those. So we're basically pretty much all on the same page here. This is a safe space to share your joys and concerns and ask any questions you may have, and also for me to share some ideas that I've been thinking about over the last month and what I think is important to talk about in regards to our movement. So there's so many great things happening. It's accelerating all the time, the positive changes in our world in terms of growing respect for and awareness, I think, of animals and our responsibility toward them. And, of course, there's plenty of evidence of increased conflict and environmental destruction as well. So we have both of these trends. And so we'll see how things go. But I think from our point of view, it's so very important to accentuate the positive aspects, to focus on what we would like to move toward and less on what we want to fight against. I think it's important to be aware of the abuse of animals and to raise awareness about it. The great thing about veganism is that being besides a very potent, really amazingly potent critique of a system that is ecocidal and really, I think, ultimately suicidal, we have a wonderful positive alternative that we can all understand and learn and grow and develop. And I think there's probably nothing so important in our time than to make an effort to do this. So I'm delighted that you're all with us and that you have a similar passion for kindness and protection of animals and ecosystems. And I'd like to, as I said, mention, if you got the email that I sent in, it's okay. That the call today is going to feature, in the beginning anyway, a special guest, Lisa Wong, will be with us, and I'll introduce her in a minute. So I just want to say at the very beginning here that we usually start with a short meditation. So let's go ahead and do that wherever you happen to be. Take a moment and come into a sense of presence, a sense of gratitude for this moment that we have, for this time that we can share our hearts, our yearnings for a more compassionate and awake and aware and healed world, that we not only yearn for this, but we yearn to act to help make this happen, to contribute to the healing of our world and to the awakening of ourselves as individuals and to helping other fellow humans awaken as well, so that we can help co-create a world of sustainability and joy and freedom and peace and healing and abundance, liberation and freedom, justice and equality, the benefit not only of all of us, but for future generations as well, that we can use our life as a canvas to create and contribute to the creative unfolding of consciousness on this earth. And we give thanks for everyone who's working with us in any way. We give thanks for all the talents and skills and abilities that we all possess, knowing that each one of us has unique gifts that we can bring to this great project, that we can support each other in developing those gifts, and that ultimately we each have responsibility for how we live our lives and how we respond to the situation that we are facing on this earth, so that we can just do the best we can every day. We can give thanks that we're part of a whole network, a movement of awakening on this earth, that every effort that we make as individuals helps to contribute to raising the level of awareness, and like the tide that lifts all the ships, it helps to bring everyone higher, to a higher level. What we do in our private lives is also expressed in our public lives, so that the way we live our lives, the way we make an effort to embody vegan living, can inform all of our thoughts and words and actions as we move through our day. And this will help make us more effective as vegan advocates and bring about a deeper level of healing in ourselves and in our world. So we give thanks that we are part of this awakening of human consciousness at this time on this earth, and that every effort that we make helps to contribute to the field of compassion and healing and justice and liberation that surrounds our planet, and the great joy that shines at the heart of the universe and in the heart of each one of us, the joy of being alive and having the opportunity of a life. That joy also sings in the hearts of birds, of foxes and dolphins and whales and giraffes and fishes and all beings celebrate their lives. So we give thanks for the great gift of this life, knowing that it's temporary. We're here for just a few precious days, months, and years, and that we can make an effort to be a force for healing and awakening. And that all of the efforts that we're making and that everything we're doing here this evening will be to bless our world and contribute to the healing of all human beings. And so it is. All right. So thanks everyone for joining together in our meditation time. And as you all know, if you press *6, or you may know anyway, but anyway, just a reminder, press *6 on your phone, and that is the magic combination that should, if all is going well, notify me here that I can unmute your phone. So just do that. If you'd like to say something, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment at any point here. So I'll go ahead and jump in to the next part of our call, because I think it's really great. You know, Madeline and I met Lisa Wong a couple of, not that long ago, maybe a month ago, yeah, month and a half ago or so. And we were giving a talk up here in Santa Rosa. It was a wonderful event that was put on to help just support us in our national and international travels. Some local activists put it on at a local vegan restaurant here called Gaia's Garden. And this wonderful person, Lisa Wong, drove all the way up from San Jose, which is quite a drive, and joined us. And so we met her, and Madeline and I thought it would be nice for everyone to have the opportunity to share some of her understanding and thoughts on the call that we're having. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute Lisa right now. Actually, before I unmute her, I'll say a few words about Lisa. I'm going to say a few words about Lisa. So Lisa is a licensed acupuncturist, and she's also the executive director and the founder of the Center for Healing by Design, which is based in San Jose and has a mission of empowering people worldwide with revolutionary self-care education, experience, and tools to help them get in touch with their inner doctor, the idea that we all have an inner doctor. And so she has a master's degree in traditional Chinese medicine from the Five Branches University and has served as a staff acupuncturist at Kaiser Permanente in San Jose, and as well as a subject expert for the California Acupuncture Board and a massage therapist at the El Camino Hospital. She's also the author of a book called The Pocket Guide to Your Body's Control Panels and the Healing by Design Self-Care Guide for Relieving Headaches in Minutes, and specializes in auricular medicine, which is a comprehensive integrative modality that treats problems of the body through stimulating acupoints in the ears. And she's also, besides working with clients and students and the general public, helping to raise awareness about the benefits of a vegan diet. She's a longtime vegan. She's also, I guess, the first vegan acupuncturist to climb to the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. And that gave her the feeling of and the inspiration to help people from all walks of life to climb the mountains in their lives, basically. And so she's taught many classes to people worldwide to help them become more proficient at self-care and vegan healing, which is so important, I think, for all of us to learn more about. So I'm going to go ahead now and unmute Lisa's phone and invite her to join us on the call. So there we go. Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks, great. Dr. Toretto. Thank you.
Yeah, Lisa.
Hi, Madeline. Oh, I'm just so delighted to be here with you and the rest of your community.
Hi, Lisa.
Yeah, she sees that's a little better now. Okay, I just unmuted Madeline's phone. So, Lisa, thanks so much for joining us, and I wanted to just have a chance to talk a little bit about your work. So if you can just say a few minutes, just tell everybody sort of the basic thrust of your work. That would be great, I think.
Yeah, I'd love to, yeah. So thank you for the introduction, and thank you for the meditation. I just really, every time I hear you speak, Dr. Toretto, my heart just sings because the beautiful words you say, it just resonates. My whole body DNA just sings with you.
thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really healing to hear you and hear your music too. So thank you. I'm just so excited to be with you and have this opportunity to meet everyone and share what I can do for the vegan community worldwide. I'm just so humbled that I can have this my little ability to support the vegans and vegetarians, primarily I can see with my passion in using auricular medicine is my specialty, which is really a special modality within acupuncture, but just focusing on using the ear to do both diagnostic and treatment of diseases or conditions or even just for preventing diseases and improving health, optimizing our body. And to me, because before I became acupuncturist, my previous career was in high tech as a engineer and user interface for cell phones. So I married the two of my careers, and now I, through my nonprofit, I teach people to recognize their control, what I so-call control panels in their bodies, and finding their healing buttons, which I want to make it a really easy and fun way to for people to care for themselves and actually get in touch with their inner doctor, a concept that I did not invent. It's actually I borrowed it from Dr. Albert Schweitzer, who about 50-some years ago coined the phrase that we are, each one of us, carry our own doctor within us. And
right.
Yeah, and it's so appropriate because that's why foods, when we eat foods from nature and plant-based foods, that's what vegan lifestyle is about, is that when we be part of nature, because we're from nature and our body is designed to heal ourselves when we give it the food that we are meant to use. And so that is so really go in line with my vegan values, which I became vegan 8 years ago. I actually became vegetarian 25 years ago when I was graduating from UC Davis in computer science. At that time, I wasn't doing it for my own health, but for the animals, because I took an animal ethics class. And that really opened my eyes to the cruelty of the food industry to the animals. And that's where I started my journey towards veganism. It took me a long time, but eventually 8 years ago, a close friend of mine had a stroke, and I talked to another person who overcame his stroke by eating plant-based. And that's when I really interested in seeing really the power of food to heal, and then combining my journey in studying medicine, studying our holistic health, makes total sense that food is our best medicine. And from my perspective, also the body can heal itself. And using, if only people knows about how we can work with our body as a one and only the most sophisticated piece of not just physical machinery, but also the mental and spiritual, emotional aspect of our being. But it's our beautiful creation that we embody, and this body is designed to self-heal. And I'm just so grateful that my journey towards to health have pointed me to appreciate how our body is designed so miraculously with this power to heal, this mechanism. It's already in built in us, and that yeah.
Can you tell just a little bit about the what you're talking about, like the power of our bodies to heal? So you're besides being a vegan, you also do classes and you have patients or you work with clients, and you use the energy, right? The energy systems through acupuncture is based on chi energy. So can you tell a little bit about that? How that and how we as vegans, so we're all vegans, and I think everyone wants to be able to be a good advocate for animals, and we need to be healthy to be effective advocates. You could say a few things of what you think we could do as vegans to keep our health in good shape and so forth.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's my personal mission, and also the mission of my nonprofit is to support vegans so that we can walk our talk so powerfully if we can use simple techniques as simple as self-acupressure and to different parts of our body that I call control panels. Here in this case is our ears, our head, our scalp, our hands, and our feet, also our back. These are places that I teach courses in teaching people how to appreciate those areas of our body. Each of them is a mini map of our body. So if any, and I call them control panels because they are the windows to us communicating with our inner doctor. So our inner doctor, the concept is that our body, if there's any condition we are experiencing, then our inner doctor puts out that information onto our control panels, the different parts of the body that I just mentioned. Especially the ear is the most accurate because that's my specialty. I have a special life method to read the ears so that we can assess the information and then for us later.
Lisa, mm-hmm. When I talk to you, if you could tell this here on the phone about how important it is for vegans to be healthy, and that your mission is also directed to the vegans to help them to be healthy, because even eating a vegan diet, sometimes one still has some things one likes to cure, and it's very important for vegans.
Yes, Madeline. It's also, it's not just for vegans, but for the vegetarians who are thinking that they are healthy, but then they don't know that with just very small amount of animal proteins, like maybe 10%, even just that it still will cause problem for the body, and it will reflect onto these parts of the control panels. Even though they wouldn't feel it, but then in time those problems will develop, and it will come to feel symptoms at certain points. So for vegans, my way of using the ear and the other parts of the body to teach people to check in with their inner doctor is a really good way for people to include, especially now with vegans, they can know how their food, how their diet is helping them, whether they are,
And that's very important, the diet. And what you're saying about vegetarianism, that's not the whole way. It's important to see how different it is when one leaves all the animal products away and let the animals live free and all that.
Yeah.
So that's a very good point you're saying.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that we get to the limit of time, but we would like to ask you, do you have anything to us vegans here on the call, something they can actually already follow, some little gift for them?
Yes. A tip that I can share with all vegans is, it's a great habit to have to every morning, every night, or as often as possible to massage your ears, both ears, with intention to look for any kind of pain that is when you press the ear with firm pressure on your fingertips, as if you are looking for some pain, and if there are pain, then that is your inner doctor telling you there's some part of that body correspond to that part of the ear have some imbalance or energy blockage.
Yeah.
And when you do, don't be alarmed. You can always do something as simple as rubbing that sore spot, that tender spot, at the same time using your intention, like your meditation, your intention to focus on that pain, and use your breath to breathe out the pain. You can use your index finger and thumb, like your thumb could be in the back of your ear, and then your index finger could be, we could start in the bottom of the ear and stick your index finger onto your bottom inside, and then slowly to kind of use your index finger to guide your thumb and draw in a small motion, like a small circle, and as if you're covering up every single inch of your ear, and then you're looking for tender spots.
Just doing this is kind of releasing energy also and well-being, right?
Absolutely. And Chinese medicine says that, we are all energy beings and energy runs through our whole body,
mm-hmm.
through all energy channels. And if there's any blockage, then you will experience pain. So in such a small space as the ear, because the ear's relationship to a whole body, just by covering up the whole ear and massaging and look for any sign of tenderness or pain, and then when you do, you use your intention, your breath to think about kissing away the pain or blowing away the pain as you massage it with your finger. That is something simple but very powerful one can do for your health.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing this, and thanks for all your tips and your revealing of the health through this technique. And I'm sure we can go on rubbing our ears in the in the following days and see how it feels. It feels really good. I know it from my own experience. So thank you so much, Lisa.
You're welcome. And I love to take this opportunity to invite all vegans, if there's interest, to get in contact with me and help me, give me feedback as I develop my online course to teach vegans of the world my techniques and share this self-care education with them so that they can powerfully embrace and champion their vegan values. And, we can change the world by first changing ourselves and keeping ourselves healthy, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
great.
Lisa. Appreciate your joining us.
So you can, people can get in touch with me by going through lisawong360.com. And,
okay, I'll I can put that up on send out the email out to everyone. I'll include that and also the link to your website.
Thank you so much, Dr. Taro.
Yeah.
Great.
I really appreciate the time.
Thank you for joining us here. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. So thanks, Madeline, for helping out with the interview. And I'd like to go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the things that are on my mind and on my heart here. I like how she said, if there's any blockage, you will experience pain. I think that kind of sums it up. And we see that happening, I think, in the world today quite a bit, this basic blockage of our inherent wisdom and compassion and sensitivity. And with our routine and absolutely terrible abuse of animals, and how that not only causes them pain, but it's causing us enormous pain as well. And we're not really seeing, I don't think, how that comes back, how that boomerangs on us. So I want to, I just realized I'm looking at the May 2019 resources that I gave to everybody. If you have hopefully had a chance to download that. And I just realized that I failed to link there the article that I just wrote. And so I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit because I think it's important. And again, press star 6 if you have any questions or comments or concerns. But I just wrote a short piece called Honoring Mothers and Ending Slavery. You know, we had Mother's Day recently. And I've been thinking about this for a long time. And I talk about this somewhat in the World Peace Diet, but just the whole idea, as we sow, we reap. And the most precious thing for all of us, I think, as human beings, and also for all beings, for animals as well, is freedom. And to be able to live our lives in accordance with the inner yearnings that are deeply embedded in us as beings. And I know myself, I've seen this, and I've heard about it and so forth, but with animals, there's this tremendous basic freedom that they have with, you know, within the context of their physical bodies and nature and their relationships. But within that, they experience freedom there, and they're not interfered with by human, you know, traditionally, I mean, for millions of years before we started doing canned hunting, which is basically what herding is. Hunting is somewhat interfering with them, but herding them, which is an extreme form of canned hunting, just confining them to a space and then having them be born into that. So they're born into slavery. So their freedom is completely removed. And this removes their purpose, removes the most precious aspect of their lives. And I've seen this, for example, I think somebody, maybe you've heard me mention it, but we have a garden here that we put up a somewhat temporary fence made out of nylon, which worked very well to keep the deer out. It was a 7-foot fence. But when the deer got in by mistake, she destroyed the fence. She just smashed her way through it. And it was such a vivid illustration of how desperately beings yearn to not have their physical bodies be physically confined and trapped, and how animals will bite their own leg off if they're caught in a trap to get free and so forth. So this whole idea of imprisoning animals, I don't think we realize how violent that actually is. Even people, we run into quite often, people say, well, you know, I have a few eggs. It's nothing wrong with that because they're happy. Happy hens, they're happy, and the eggs are just there, and, you know, no use in having them go to waste. My neighbor has a few chickens, and so it's a perfectly good way to do. And we don't see that the whole system is based on slavery. That these chickens that the neighbor has, who seem to be so happy, are not being allowed to live their lives as sovereign beings. They've been violently removed from Southeast Asian jungles where they've evolved and lived for millions of years into our backyard, where now we own them as property. And we feed them, we steal their basic capacities for self expression, how they would living in the complexities of a jungle ecosystem with males and females and their own young and so forth. None of that is allowed to them. There aren't typically are never males involved, and they're dependent on us for being protected and so forth. And so the whole thing is kind of invisible. We don't see that we're harming them. We don't see that we're not allowing them to fulfill their purposes. And I think it's symptomatic of people, us ourselves, have had our own purposes stolen and our own freedom stolen. We've been born, in a sense, into a similar situation, into a similar type of violence, where our basic connection with nature, with our mothers and fathers in many ways, and with our own inner wisdom has been attacked, but just by the way the culture operates, in a way that are forced to eat animal-based foods and to operate within context based on seeing animals as objects, seeing each other as objects in economic and political systems that objectify nature and humans and animals. And we're just in the system, so we don't see. We've become numbed to, I think, in a sense, blinded by the programming. So everything has become invisible. You know, the violence has become invisible. We're eating it. We're causing it. We're voting for it with our dollars. We're telling our children that this is the way it is. Basically, this is how God wants it. Our religions, of course, are part of the system. And the underlying teaching really is slavery. I mean, slavery is the underlying teaching. And we very much, in a sense, I think, pride ourselves on the fact that we ended slavery in 1865, right? That was the end of it. When the Civil War ended, there's no more slavery. And we don't have slavery anymore. And in fact, if we go on the internet and really look at some of the research that's being done on human slavery and human trafficking, it's really quite horrifying to see the extent to which human trafficking has exploded and is still being practiced by the millions and millions of children, of women, of men too, are owned as property and are not able to get off out of their situation. You know, these men who are working on fishing ships, for example, and they're operated out of Thailand, a lot of them Southeast Asian, and a lot of that fish ends up in stores in the United States. And if they try to escape, they're killed. They're literally slaves. Slave trades also operate in a lot with children in factories in many countries in the world, and also in plantations of various kinds, like especially, of course, chocolate plantations in Africa, tea plantations. India, there's a lot of basically slavery. Where kids are sold and into slavery or are picked up because they don't have parents and end up in slavery. And women, there's a huge trafficking of women and children unfortunately, for sexual use and abuse. And there was an article in the USA Today, I mean, which is really, you can't get more mainstream than that, talking about this vast underworld of trafficking. And so it's so important, I think, for us to understand that animal agriculture at its core is based on stealing babies from their mothers on every operation. Cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, ducks, geese, fishes, lambs, goats, all these animals are stolen from their mothers. I've been to fish hatchery operations. And fish hatcheries, you'd think it's kind of a nice thing. It sounds so nice. A fish hatchery, you know, it's where we try to increase the number of fish that are swimming in the streams. We have, trout hatcheries, salmon hatcheries, and they seem very benevolent. But I remember going in there and just as a sort of a, this is a long time ago. But, they let me take a tour and I could watch the workers. And I was really quite, again, shocked at the violence that they use to the females as they fish, as they go upstream. They want to make the whole thing more efficient, so they have more fish. And so they catch them, they as they go upstream, that they have the fish are forced to go through a certain area where they catch the fish. Sort of mechanically, and then they have workers who get the eggs out of the fish. And the way they do it is they just slam them, they just crush them, and all these eggs come squirting out of the fish. The fish is, uterus kind of thing, and all these eggs come squirting out, and then, of course, they have sperm that they've gotten from the males, and then they impregnate every single one, so they get a higher yield than they would just in nature in the wild. That's the whole idea. It's brutal to the fishes involved. They don't care about them. They just want to have more babies, I guess. And it's really for us to use them to then catch them and kill them and eat them. That's the whole idea. And so I'm just including fishes along with all the other animals, the birds and the mammals, and also bees for honey. I mean, it's a rape, kill, and steal operation. You impregnate the queen against her will. You steal the honey, and then you kill the bees, you kill the queens. I mean, it's all sexual abuse, killing, and stealing. Those three things. Those are the three things, but it's based essentially on stealing. Stealing is the underlying thing. I'm going to steal your purpose, steal your honey, steal your eggs, steal your milk, steal your life, steal your flesh, you know, really. I mean, it's taking away. And so this violence is invisibilized is a new word I've created. It's invisibilized. We make it invisible. It's made invisible by the attitudes that are injected into us when we're sitting around the table as little kids, so that when the neighbor has the chickens, we just think they're pets like dogs and cats, in a sense, which is really another form of stealing the sovereignty of animals too. And so this is the culture that we're born into. So we don't have to feel guilty about it. We just have to understand that this is a wound that we've all endured by being born here. And so how do we respond to that? Because we can see clearly, I think, that's the whole idea, that not only is this completely ethically wrong to harm animals, to abuse them, because we all know that animals are the subjects of their lives, that they have interests that are as important to them as our interests are to us. So ethically, on some level, we know that this is wrong, and to do it is wrong, and to allow other people to do it is also wrong, in the sense that, I mean, we can't, it's very difficult. We can't, you know, go around, you know, grabbing hamburgers out of people's hands when we go buy them or something, but to do the best we can to try to share or educate or enlighten people about and heal. I think really I like what Lisa was saying, you know, the importance of healing. Healing our society at the deepest level, not just physically, but psychologically and spiritually and ethically, that if we don't get to the deep level ethically of what we're doing and how we've been wounded ethically and morally by basically being wounded as kids, so that our natural sense of compassion and kindness has been shut down, and we've been compelled to participate in these mealtime rituals, eating animal flesh from enslaved animals, so that we see it as normal and as something that's really, even in a sense, natural, that God gave us these animals, and that's so it's just the way it's set up. So this article is essentially talking about the fact that we have this continuing increase in slavery and trafficking to the point where now, I mean, I could actually send you to YouTube videos that I've watched that discuss the rampant and massive trafficking rings of children for sex that are run by foster parents, the child protective services that takes kids away from their parents, the immigration services that where these a lot of these kids end up. So many children, millions, according to the experts that are studying this, because it's very underreported, are stuck in these sex trafficking rings, which, you know, I don't even want to think about who's doing this. And according to the USA Today article, it's they say it's kind of like, you know, normal people you see walking around. But that's a whole other thing that I don't want to get into. But basically, this, I think, really is an outward manifestation of a massive iceberg that's sort of hidden underneath of sexual abuse of literally millions of females and children every single day for food, of animals. Because all the animals that we eat are sexually abused as children in animal terms. They're just children when they're put on the rape racks. They're given special hormones to come into pregnancy earlier than they normally ever would, and so forth. So So this is what we're sowing, and then we're reaping this. And the suffering that this causes, I don't think we can even comprehend it. I mean, when children are abused physically and sexually, that trauma then goes on the rest of their lives. And the old saying, hurt people, very often they're the ones who then commit sexual abuse to children when they get older because it was done to them. And so this woundedness, we have such difficulty creating harmony because the wounds and the trauma create wounded people who are somewhat distorted people who do violent things because they have been similarly abused. So the whole idea is to get to the root of this, that each one of us can respond and realize that by forcing children to eat animal foods and by all of us committing as a culture this massive violence, sexual violence as well as physical violence to females and children, we're sowing the seeds constantly for continued violence and similar predicaments, essentially, that our children and women especially are going through. Men also, males are also sexually abused. Yeah, cows and pigs and chickens are also sexually abused. So we see this happening. And to try to introduce these ideas more and more into the dialogue about slavery and trafficking. I mean, there's a huge dialogue about slavery and trafficking, but no one ever talks about the fact that we're doing this to millions of animals, and that seems to be fine. You know, no one has a problem with that, and it's extremely graphic. I won't go into it for our call, but what we do to animals is just really horrific, the way it's done and the extent of it, the numbers, the intensity, and the fact that it's completely unnecessary. I mean, there's no need to do this. We have literally millions of people who are vegans who are thriving, and that's the great good news, I think, with the whole thing, is that we're able to live our lives and thrive in a healthy way without causing any suffering to animals. Let them be free. And that when we do that, actually, as we all know, we literally cause a massive increase in our own physical health, psychological health, spiritual health, environmental health, and cultural health. So this is the underlying I think passion, really, that probably all of you feel. You wouldn't be on this call and doing the work you're doing if you didn't feel in your heart a sense of urgency, which I think is so healthy. You know, the sense of urgency to understand what's going on, the sense of kind of like a sense of hunger to learn and to share and to grow. This is the basic sanity, really, I think, that sings in every cell of our being, that if we treasure our own life, if we respect ourselves and our lives, then by, you know, goodness sakes, we really would like other people's lives also to be respected, and we would like them also to be included in the sphere of our compassion as well, and our kindness, and the sense of joy and gratitude that we have for our lives. So it's really an enormously positive experience, and it's an extraordinarily, I think, just a tremendous gift to arrive at this point in our human lives as adults where we understand these things, and we can see clearly how blessed we are to understand that we do not need to contribute to the violence that pervades our society. And we can also find ways to deepen this understanding and to show others, to share this with other people, and to fear, I guess, as best we can, to create the effective ways of doing that. I think that's the key, is to, you know, create effective ways of sharing these ideas so that we're not just turning people off and irritating them because we say, well, I'm a vegan and I'm right and you're not a vegan, so you're wrong. That basically is a good way to just make people say, well, you know, you can keep your ideas to yourself because I like bacon. Because people are wounded and their capacity to hear the message has been so reduced. So to be able to plant seeds effectively and bring these these ideas to people in a way that it's coming from them, that it arises from their own wisdom. And that's why I think making these connections is so helpful. People care about trafficking, and to help them see, look, we're trafficking in millions of animals who are experiencing the hideous effects of this. And we're planting those seeds all the time. We're eating dairy products and eggs and flesh of trafficked animals who have been sexually abused. And when in that article in USA Today, when this guy was confronted, don't you feel bad about the fact that you're sexually abusing children? You know, and he said, I don't want to think about how the sausage was made. And that's what he said. And it was interesting because the person interviewing him said, yeah, see, they just treat these kids like they're just a pig, like just a piece of meat. And failed, the interviewer failed to see the irony in that statement, that exactly, when we're trained every single day, day after day after day, three times a day with our meals, the most powerful way we can learn anything is through rituals, to suppress our capacity to make connections, to just take what we want and not think about the effects of that, then we don't stop with animals. We do it to each other. So I'm not saying that we should protect animals in order to help humans, right? I mean, we should protect animals to protect animals. But also, when we do that, we also create the possibility for us to protect each other. You know, that's the beautiful thing. So I do want to always, emphasize that, because sometimes I think people think that, that as vegans, we're caring about animals, and the World Peace Diet talks about this quite a bit, that whatever we sow, we reap. So we should stop sowing suffering to animals so we as humans can have a better life. And, that's true. But we should also, obviously, we're called to stop it for the sake of the animals themselves. I mean, that's the fundamental thing. That's kind of the irony, really, we kind of laugh about in spiritual teachings, that if we treat other people with kindness and respect, and if we're generous and giving and so forth, then, that's better for other people. That's why we do it. But the irony and the joke, in a sense, is that when we do that, we are much more happy ourselves, we're treated much better ourselves, and we find a more abundant life ourselves. That's just how it works. So the underlying idea is to awaken to the deeper wisdom that comes that when we're altruistic is actually the ultimate selfishness, right? I mean, altruism, we don't do it to be selfish, but the idea is that as long as we're trafficking animals and abusing these females and children and these beings who are so at our mercy, then we're creating context, and everyone suffers from that. Everyone, sooner or later. I don't care who it is. I mean, the richest people at the top of the corporate ladders. I mean, if we really look deeply into their daily thoughts and feelings of their lives, I don't think you would really want to have to experience it, because I don't think there's a lot of joy and happiness there, from what I can see, and I've seen quite a bit. I was born in certain circles that were pretty wealthy, and seen just tremendous suffering and suicide and drug addiction and so forth. So the idea is to realize that having a purpose, having a mission, having a reason for our life, and having a yearning to fulfill that mission that we're born on this earth to fulfill, and then taking action in our daily lives to do that, to fulfill this mission, and then discovering when we do that, that there's something I think we can call grace, where we find the universe begins to synchronize. And we begin suddenly to find doors opening, and the weights falling off of our shoulders, and wounds healing, both not only physical wounds, but psychological wounds, relationship wounds healing. We begin to get up in the morning with a sense of gratitude that we can really live, we can live another day and make a positive difference in the world. I think, these things all create like a positive feedback loop. The more we sense this and we feel this sense of grace and this sense of being part of a benevolent unfoldment on planet Earth, that our life is really precious, and the more we see that in others, not only in animals, but in other people. And that just reaffirms and deepens this yearning that we have to fulfill our mission on this life, to take time every day to be quiet and to meditate and to connect more deeply with the inner wisdom that's there, and then to come out of that and to act, to bring our inner inspiration and insight and our sense of a mission into action. And as we do that, then we find the grace, again, comes sweetly into our lives in different ways. It doesn't have to be from outer people. It can be just from noticing the beautiful way that trees respond to the breeze and the rain, and realizing that we're on a magnificently beautiful planet that's vulnerable and yet enormously intelligent, and that we're part of that intelligence. And the joy of just being able to contribute to that in some creative way, because we really have tremendous tools at our disposal today of reaching other people, of connecting with nature. And so it's a very exciting time to be alive, I think, even though we sometimes feel overwhelmed with the negativity that we see around us in the war machine and global climate stabilization and all these things. But it's also an enormously positive time when we connect with our mission and with the deeper spiritual connection that we have with the forces that I think bring us wisdom and intuitive awareness, so that we can act in a way that gives our lives meaning. And the key to the whole thing really is vegan living. I mean, veganism is ahimsa, or nonviolence, not harming other beings. So having that as the foundation and yearning to really understand what that is, and then create contexts and communities where we can somehow deepen this and articulate this and spread and share this message. So I want to thank all of you for community. I do see that we have someone has raised their hand here, pressed *6. So I'm going to go ahead. This is area code 508. I'm not sure who it is, but I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. Hello.
Hi, Will. It's Marlene.
Oh, Marlene, hi. Nice to
hear
your voice.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you so
much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Lisa. And thank you, Madeline. And I wanted to be unmuted because I wanted to share two things. And one is to let everyone on the call know that I'll be you'll be my guest on Vegan Nation Radio next Thursday, discussing your article, Honoring Mothers and Ending Slavery. So thank you for that. I'm really excited, and I'm also excited to include Madeline's Intuitive Kitchen, a little segment on that show as well, to help people make practical applications. And also, I just wanted to share on that note that about building the new. And so for me, I'm really grateful for Vegan Nation Radio, which airs on WCUW 91.3 FM in Massachusetts and online as well, because it gives me that outlet. Because when you mentioned about reaching out to the anti-trafficking groups and the social justice groups, et cetera, and I have in trying to share the vegan message and this understanding of this relationship of the trafficking of the animals to all the horror that's going on, and what is typical, as I know all the other vegans know, is the message gets ignored. And so I just realized, okay, I'm planting seeds and let it go. But I'm thankful that I have Vegan Nation, because I feel like, okay, then here's the avenue where it can be broadcast and can be discussed. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marlene. Yes, that's really good. Because I really want to encourage everyone, if you have a chance to to listen in to Marlene's radio show. I went ahead and I didn't do it for May, but for June, I'm including a link to her WCUW. I hope we're still working here. I just saw my my thing just went down here. I hope it's working. Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Good. I heard it's working. The I have this thing on my screen, and it's just gone blank. So that's never happened before. The computer, I'm not sure what happened. So I'm just sort of suddenly swimming here with the freeconferencing.com website. I just disappeared all of a sudden. So I hope our call is being recorded still. I'm a little concerned about that. We might have lost the recording. But let's see here. Okay, well, Madeline is saying everything's good. So anyway, so let's see, it's still working. Okay, so what Marlene was saying, what I was saying was that I'll include the link, because her show on WCUW is archived, and it's great. I mean, she's interviewing really interesting vegan people every week for an hour. She just had on today, actually, it's every Thursday, I believe now, people from DXE, Direct Action Everywhere. They're having a big animal rights conference in Berkeley next month, and talking about that. And I'll be on next time talking about what I'm just talking about now. But this is the radio. This is like people driving to work, you know, driving home from work, I guess. It's also on online radio. So it's a very admirable, I think it's a wonderful example of what I was just saying, how Marlene, you know, has had a passion for trying to help share the vegan message, and went through the World Peace Facilitator training, and really studied and learned, and this hunger, this yearning, which I think is so important. It's our true nature. I mean, our true nature is to want to learn and grow and awaken and share and heal and create. So to every day take time to stoke the fire of this inner passion that we all have, that we have a mission, we have a purpose for our life, and to discover that and then to share that. And so she's been doing that very in a committed way, like we heard last month from Patricia Todd, who's every week now for years, she's been meeting on Wednesdays and creating a context for people to share the vegan message in Los Angeles. And Marlene's doing the same thing through her radio show and interviewing people, and so, like she was saying, even though we can't perhaps get through sometimes directly to the people who are, you know, we'd like to get through to, like the people who are working in the movement to stop trafficking or to stop slavery, because they're still eating meat, they're still eating dairy products, and they're all upset about human trafficking. Yeah, and they're still supporting trafficking of animals. And then we see the same thing, of course, in all the social justice movements. People who are working for women's liberation and eating dairy products and so forth. So this is just the way it is. But she, instead of getting frustrated about it, she says, all right, well, you know, I'm just going to keep planting the seeds and creating a radio show to bring these concerns and raise the awareness. And that's what we can do. You know, that's basically it. I mean, if we spend our life doing the best we can, I think it's a life well spent. And to spend less time worrying about how it's all going to turn out, if the Earth is going to actually survive the onslaught of carnivorous humans, or if it's going to be blown up in a massive cataclysm of boiling water and nuclear radiation, or whatever, if something else will happen. It's funny. I don't know if it's true, but we took a walk the other day with a woman named Laurie Masters, who's a friend of ours. She's a longtime vegan, and she's worked a lot as an editor, editing vegan books. And she was just sharing how one of the things that keeps her going is that she heard quite a few years ago, many years ago actually, one of the most famous cases that was studied by a lot of people of a person who had a near-death experience, a guy who really was out of, he went away for a long time, like I think it was like 10 minutes or something, or I can't remember, but anyway, and then came back and told about his experience, and he said very clearly that when he left his body and he went sort of partway to the other side, he was shown the future on planet Earth. And he said that he, one of his main things when he came back was, he said, I just want you to know that in the long run, everything is great. It's all good. And the Earth is not going to be destroyed. But it's, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do the work. And it's really important that you do what you're doing. that's why it is, you know. So, this idea that everything's going to be fine, so we don't have to do anything, is a very dangerous idea. But also the idea, he said, just drop the despair. You know, drop, that was his message. You know, drop the despair, do the work, and don't get mired in the fact that, you know, it looks hopeless or whatever. Just to do the best we can. And I think an underlying level of spiritual awareness is that we realize that what we are actually is eternal consciousness, and all expressions of life are eternal consciousness, including the beautiful animals that we share this earth with, and to begin to get beyond the materialism of our society where we reduce everything to matter. That's really what slavery is. It's reducing beings to matter and saying, I own you. You can't own a being. Property. That's just owning. It's like owning the clothes the person's wearing. You can't own the person. That's a complete illusion. And it's really kind of inspiring to read the book Uncle Tom's Cabin. I don't know if you've read Uncle Tom's Cabin, but I read it actually not too long, a couple of years ago. And at the end, Uncle Tom, you know, Tom, who is a slave, and toward the end, he really reaches an extremely high state, I think, spiritually, where he realizes that what he is a spiritual being, and he can never be owned, and he's an eternal being. And then they have no power over him. The slaveholders can't do anything. They can torture him, they can whatever, but he's free. And they finally, you know, kill him, but he's free because he knows he's free. And I think essentially for all of us, to operate as best we can from that standpoint, that what we are is in the world here, living our lives as expressions of consciousness, doing the best we can to be a manifestation of consciousness, of healing and awareness. So that's the inner work that we're always talking about is so important, but also remembering that ultimately what we are is not just a collection of biochemical reactions that is just trying to pass its genes on to the next generation. You know, this narrative that we saddle children with in school and that's preached in academia and so forth is so demeaning and demoralizing and reductive and creates consumers, basically. It's a great narrative if you want to have people who are easily controlled and manipulated, whose basic intelligence is reduced, whose passion for life and a sense of mission is reduced, and who will believe what you want to tell them. So I really think that as vegans, a big part of our job is to work on our own awakening, our connection with nature and the beauty around us, and contributing to that beauty in the little things. And I really think I wanted to emphasize that again, the importance of being sensitive to the little things that we're doing, how we actually treat our husbands and wives and children and friends and neighbors and ourselves, that what we do in private is really what we do in public, in a sense. I mean, it's all connected. And there's a saying I heard a while back, which I think has got a lot of wisdom to it. I think it came maybe even from the Christian community, but some guy was saying it, and the saying is that how what he said is, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I think that is really a lot of wisdom. How one does anything is how one does everything. So if we just look carefully into that and see how we do anything is how we do everything. So that's why how I hang up my pants when I'm at the end of the day, or how I do anything, it's how we do everything. If we do things mindfully, with love, with caring, be as conscious and as deep as we can with everything we're doing and saying and acting, then that's how we do everything. And to try to heal, really, I guess is a better word, the compartmentalization that our culture forces on us, that we have this sort of mask that we put on in public where we're like this, and then we go back and we're just a total different way, the rest of the time. That we to make an effort to overcome that compartmentalization and to be in integrity with all of our different expressions of our life. That's why I think what vegan living is all about is compassion and kindness for animals in the minutiae of our daily lives. So, and then when we do that, we uncover the grace that brings meaning and joy to our lives. That's rich. That's real richness. I mean, that real wealth, I guess, is the word. Wealth doesn't have anything really to do, I don't think, with money. It's much more to do with a life that we feel is us. It's our life. It's authentic, and it's our expression for this precious time that we're on this earth, the truth that we are, and to give ourselves completely to the process, whatever that is. And I think each one of us, when we do that, we create a field of consciousness around us that encourages other people to do the same thing, just because we're doing it, right? We can be a model for that. So to model this, in a sense, be an example of that. All right. So thank you so much, Marlene. If anyone else has anything you'd like to share, any questions or comments or concerns about healing and awakening, or the narrative in our society, or what I said about trafficking and slavery and women and all of that, and children. I mean, there's a lot more to it, of course, but press *6 on your phone. We're getting down to the wire. I can't believe it's already 6 here in California, 6:20. And I guess that's 9:20 in the East Coast. So tomorrow I'm going to get on a plane and fly to Cincinnati. And our friends Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson, as we heard a couple of months ago, have been working hard, and they're putting on the Cincinnati Veg Fest, which will be on Saturday. So I'll be out there for that, and just for a couple of days, and then flying back here again. So it's kind of a quick trip to the Midwest, to Cincinnati. And it's really great, I think, to see what Mark and Anna have been doing and accomplishing in Cincinnati. And she'll be launching officially her new World Peace Yoga book. And there'll be a whole lot of speakers. There's going to be a good friend, Joanne Kong, will be speaking, who kind of followed in our footsteps a year later in India and went around to different cities that we had gone through with our connection there. We connected them up, and he's the founder of the Sattvic Indian Vegan Society. And she's also a concert pianist and a longtime vegan. And so she'll be there. And also Miyoko Shinner from Miyoko's Cheese will be there speaking. And also Sarah and Christopher, who have a great veganism and spirituality kind of podcast and training that they do. Sarah Oakley and Christopher. And something I just posted, I think maybe it was today, that The Guardian has an article on how cheese is now really hitting the mainstream, and they interview Miyoko about that. But it's great to see how the plant-based alternatives, especially to meat and eggs and dairy, are just becoming gigantic in that industry, so and very successful. This is really a lot of the headlines for our May resources. I'll go through a few of those just now. America is running out of Impossible Burgers. That's the headline. Beyond Meat has remarkable IPO reaching valuation of $3 billion. And these are two different companies that have had really quite remarkable success. It's turning everybody's heads. Impossible Burger cannot keep up with production, and they're really, and actually our, Nancy Posnack sent me an article that made the argument that Impossible Burger is not nearly as toxic. I guess some people say, oh, it's GMO, this and that, and, you know, it is vegan. No one argues that, but some people say it's not that healthy. But this article was, and I think I have a link to it actually somewhere here, that the Impossible Burger is actually quite, seems to be quite not unhealthy, but not as unhealthy as people say. And then Beyond Meat also has had tremendous success. And let's see, there's some kind of, let's see what else. There's Madeline's interview on Calling All Vegans. That's a great, by the way, if any of you would like to be interviewed on Calling All Vegans, it's a really wonderful vegan podcast based in Toronto. And Paul Gibelli, who's a World Peace Diet facilitator relatively recently, was interviewed also after Madeline, and he's doing a lot of great things to help bring the vegan message to people in Toronto. So a number of you, I think, if you're doing things that you think would be helpful for people to be more aware of, Sue Spar is really loves the World Peace Diet, and I'm sure would love to interview you, and it'd be a good way for you to get the word out about what you're doing. Oh yeah, here it is. It's Impossible Burgers, Soy Hemoglobin and Its Source. That article, you can read that if you're interested in finding out more about the backside of Impossible Burger, and that it's really not that bad. It's kind of what that article says. Which was, I was kind of glad to read that. I probably wouldn't eat it myself, but I know it's really big. You know, when we eat at Gaia's Garden, it's a vegan restaurant. Their Impossible Burger is selling a lot. People love it. So there's some of those things are good news. There's also the bad news. I was quite disappointed to see that the business Just, which is a vegan business, isn't really vegan because they just had a big promo party and they served real, bacon, real fish to go with their new vegan mayonnaise and other foods, so dressings and things. So they made light of it. They said, we're not about vegan. We're about bringing these plant-based foods to market, but we're not trying to replace them, something like that. So anyway, I'm kind of disappointed to see that. But, we're going to see these kinds of things. And this was, I thought was interesting. This article confirms that Tylenol reduces human empathy. It's kind of an interesting thing that some of these pharmaceutical medications that people are taking, and Tylenol, and people take literally millions of, or billions of tablets every year. And studies show that it changes the way people relate to each other and maybe to animals as well. So be aware. It's one of the reasons I like Lisa's idea of an inner doctor. Madeline and I, we are kind of, you've probably heard us say we haven't been to a doctor. I was thinking about it really, quite honestly. I mean, it's been so many years. And do as much as we can to avoid going to doctors, because I think if we can stay healthy ourselves and work with our own consciousness, it creates a feel like a momentum of health that we can build up within ourselves. And I think that momentum of health and healing in ourselves helps us be more effective with other people as well. The whole pharmaceutical medical industry, unfortunately, in many ways, and this is being understood more and more clearly, has been corrupted to make a negative momentum, to make people feel not that healthy. Then they go to the doctor, they take drugs that very often make them even more unhealthy. it's a negative momentum. It just builds on itself. And the toxins in the food, the glyphosate and all these, you know, chemicals and, you know, Monsanto, I mean, this whole thing with Monsanto now, this is amazing. Now, Monsanto just got a $2 billion, not million, but billion dollar lawsuit award in Oakland. And there's literally tens of thousands of more lawsuits in the pipeline, 30 to 40 every single day. People are being victims of cancer from using Roundup. And so, and in France and in Europe, they've now uncovered the Monsanto's Black Operations section, that Monsanto actually had a department, a Black Operations department, that went after people who criticized them publicly. And they had people that were hired to stalk these people, defame these people, threaten these people, smear these people, you know, any journalists or whistleblowers or scientists that questioned glyphosate or Roundup, or Monsanto attacked them. And they had a department to do that. And so Bayer is saying that now owns Monsanto. Well, now we're not going to allow that anymore. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's now, you know, the media is being sort of freed a little bit in its, journalists can now report on Monsanto and what they've been doing, because they're getting rid of that black operation department in Monsanto. But I'm telling you, don't think there's not a huge black operation department in the pharmaceutical industries, and they are still thriving, unfortunately. And governmental agencies and Congress, I mean, passed the law that you can't sue any pharmaceutical industry for a vaccine, for example. I mean, can you imagine if they had passed a law saying you can't sue Monsanto for anything? And it hasn't gotten that, and that never happened. But they weren't quite as powerful, I guess. Monsanto wasn't, as the pharmaceutical industry is. So, in any event, we have to really take responsibility for our health. And that's why I think meditation is so important, healthy eating, cultivating the sense of having a mission in our lives, that we have a reason for living, so that our cells and every dimension of our life is aligned with a deeper purpose. It's a beautiful thing, and we can support each other in that in different ways. So anyway, I'd like to thank all of you for joining us here on this call. We have quite a few other things in the resources to share. Look through that. Some of them, like I say, are positive. Some of them are a little more disappointing. But I think there's a lot of positive news. It's wonderful things that are happening. There's a summer camp for kids in New Mexico, if you're interested in that. And there's a new whole food plant-based restaurant rating system. There's lots of just living in continual increase in people, I think, who are doing what they can to help the world. And I was just glad to see, for example, the Swiss billionaire who lives in Wyoming is planning on buying about 15% of planet Earth to protect it, just to buy it and protect it. And so it's, you know, things can, individuals can do a lot when we're working together and we're connected. So thank you all for joining us. So I just want to look ahead here. So that later this month we'll be doing some events here in the San Francisco Bay Area, in Sebastopol, in Santa Rosa, in San Francisco, actually down in Redwood City on June 2nd. There's a screening of this great film you've heard of probably by Thomas Jackson. Compassion? Call to Compassion, I think it is. And a prayer for compassion. And again, at the end of June, we'll be doing it there in San Francisco. And then we have our call on June 20th. So that'll be the third Thursday in June is June 20th. And we'll have with us at that point, I think probably our good friends, a longtime vegan activist, Daniel and Beth Redwood, Beth and Daniel Redwood, joining us. So in the meantime, thanks everyone for joining us. I apologize if I didn't cover any of your questions that you had, that you wanted me to cover. There's so much happening right now, it seems like. And the emphasis, I think, really is on our health as vegans to do the best we can to support each other. Like Lisa was talking about, you can get in touch with all non-Western methods, I think, can be very helpful. Acupressure, acupuncture, and herbs and healthy food and meditation things that are not harming the body as much as possible, not harming animals, not tested on animals as much as possible, that we can really be recipients of and co-creators of what seem like perhaps miraculous events in our lives. Miracles will just keep on rolling. That's what they're doing. So thank you all again for joining us. I'm going to go ahead and end with a short piece of music. Let's see here. Why don't we say this is a piece of music that's dedicated to calves. We talked a lot about sacred feminine and the children. So this is a piece of music from our album called Animal Songs, Calf Song, composed and played. And it's got the voices of calves blended in with the music. Much love to you all. Thanks so much for joining us on this call. And we look forward to continuing to work together and being in touch about the possibilities we have to heal our world. Much love to you all.